Welcome, everybody, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast brought to you by Mountain Ops. Mountain Ops is a supplement company that specializes in the needs of the hunter. If you need a little more protein in your diet, boom, hit up the Magnum. Three different sources of protein in there, so it absorbs in your body at different points in time, making it last longer so you can get stronger. You can also check out their Yeti pre-workout, perfect for hitting max lifts, PRs, getting your head in the game, and getting after it. They also have Enduro. For those of you who are a little more cardio-based in your workouts, looking to charge hard for long hours at a time. The podcast is also brought to you today by Alaskan Guide Creations, the originators and innovators when it comes to bino harnesses. They're the guys to do it first and do it better, frankly, than everybody else out there. If you're going to dump a bunch of money into getting fantastic, great, expensive binoculars, well, then you better, you know, spend a little bit to protect those. They're super reasonably priced. They come in great camo patterns, and they're a fantastic product. They strap it to your chest, hold them down, fully encased in there, and protect them from all the elements. So check them out. Without further ado, let's fire this puppy up. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my esteemed co-host. You know him, you love him, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Big Sexy Phil Mendoza.
What's up?
And we are joined today by someone who I am very, very excited to have on, because as some of you may have known from listening to the show, he made my list for one of the top three people I wanted to have on. And wow. that is a man who I think is really influencing hunting in a better, more positive, and innovative way than anyone else in the industry today. And that is how he made my list. Without further ado, the man behind the lens, Brandlin Shockey.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Brandlin.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Well, you will soon be unexcited after about 10 minutes, but while you're still excited, let's get right into this. Brandlin Shockey, there's a surprisingly lack of information on the internet about you. So while I was doing research for this episode, I would have to find things other people said about you to learn about you. So why don't you give us a little timeline, a little history? How did you get from where you started to where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. I'll go way back. So I grew up obviously hunting. That was a huge part of my childhood, a big part of my my life going through, you know, all the way up through high school. At that point, I sort of went a little bit. I'm not going to say away from the hunting stuff, but I was so busy with school and all that it became less of a part of my life than it had before. And I went to a university. I took business, and I kind of went through one of those phases where I was sort of like, you know, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I was playing guitar and acoustic love songs in local cafes and stuff and trying to find myself. And I talked to my dad. My dad called me actually at one point when I graduated and was like, you know what, why don't you come in and sort of come into the family business side of stuff? I have an idea for a show. And on his way back from a trip to Pakistan on the airplane, he had written we call it a treatment, which is like a basic idea for a series called The Professionals. And I thought about it for a bit, and I said, yeah, and I hopped onto YouTube and learned how to edit for I don't know, 6 months, and then, you know, went from there.
So you're working on quite a few projects, obviously, at once, and we don't get to see in the public those projects until sometimes a year or 2 years after. So, is there anything that you can tell us now you're working on for something that's a year or two away, without giving too much information? I mean, obviously, Carter's War, that aired, was it last night or the night before? Sorry.
Yeah, Carter's War aired last Monday, so December 28th.
Oh, okay. Well, I must not caught the first one. I caught one here. I think it was, I don't know if it was a rerun or a re-air last night. It was last night, I think. Anyway, long story short, where are you at with what you can share with us about new projects?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, Carter's War is the big one right now. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Generally speaking, we start these projects a year or 2 years probably out. So something on Uncharted was being worked on for a couple of years. Carter's War, same deal. That honestly, I mean, right now, Carter, like even today, like I could barely make this podcast because we're just finishing one of the episodes. It's schedule wise, my life right now literally revolves around the edit suite. That's all we're doing is shows. It's a huge undertaking. And then into the future, we have a lot of plans. I don't know if there's anything I can bring up right now currently, going in the direction of Carter's War, going in the direction of sort of higher production values, shows that are, you know, hopefully have an appeal not just to hunters, but to people who are thinking about getting more into the outdoors, people who like the outdoors, people who are just outdoor people in general. Definitely kind of going in that direction.
So let's I got to ask you this. You were writing acoustic love songs.
Yes.
In cafes.
Yes, correct.
Now, what kind of acoustic love songs are we talking about? Were you into like Dashboard Confessionals, that kind of music scene? Was that your acoustic love songs, little Howie
like,
Day?
Like Vindicated, I am selfish. I'm... Yeah. no, that was a little bit too on the emo side for me. I kept it like a touch of my sanity, and it was a little bit less than that. I was more of the John Mayer kind of style.
All right. I can see that. So would you bring like, say you meet a girl, you're trying to impress her, all of a sudden you just start stringing, my body, your body is wonderful. Just start going. Was that the move?
Yeah. I can't. I don't know if I can tell any stories like that, just because my wife is here in the other room. But I did. I definitely sort of got on stage and I'd be like, you know, my name's Ranlin and I write love songs, acoustic love songs. Hope you like them.
to all the ladies in the crowd.
Nice.
No, I never did that. And actually, I got kind of, I had to play for, I opened for a rap guy one time. And for some reason, the organizers thought it'd be a good idea for me to open for this rap guy. So I show up there with my acoustic guitar and my little love song stick. And it's just like a crowd full of guys in hoodies and like skull tattoos and stuff. And so after that, I sort of gave that up.
That's money, because whenever I'm thinking, man, you know what I could really go for right now is some Wu-Tang Clan and Fathers Be Good to Your Daughter. You know, just mix
that's,
it up.
That's the right mix. That's exactly right. Yeah, you'd be about the same quality organizers that the guy that did that, yeah.
So you evolved from this, but you still have pretty solid music taste, you know. Does that play into the films and projects you're working on now?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the reason I brought that up is because when I started into sort of the hunting TV show side of things, I didn't have a lot of background in, you know, the same sort of – I didn't share the same background as a lot of other people, I think, that were making shows in the hunting industry. So for me, you know, I literally just hopped on YouTube, learned how to edit, and then went from there. I didn't really – and perhaps I should have, but I didn't really consider what else was out there. I didn't watch other hunting TV shows when I got started. And so, you know, I wasn't putting acoustic love songs in the shows, but the early stuff we're doing definitely had like a different style for sure.
No, that's a question I had because, you know, the Uncharted stuff that you guys came out this year or last year, I guess it's already 2016. But,
yeah.
I mean, it was so different from what I was used to seeing on TV. And, you know, with the typical 30-minute hunting show, it was, if I want to see a little bit of action, I'll wait to the last 5 minutes of the time frame and catch the kill shot or the action shot. With your guys' stuff, I mean, it was very intriguing from the get-go because of the story you were telling. Now, my question I have with that is, yeah, awesome job, by the way. I'm sorry. You guys did a great job.
No, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
When you start talking about – I know a little bit about the outdoor hunting industry and the TV, right?
Sure.
Enough to be dangerous. But I know enough that the platform that you guys are on and what other shows like in like the History Channel or some of the other – where do you see do you see your organization, you know, whether it's with your father or with your sister or someone else, or like a Carter's War, being able to bridge that gap and start to be featured on one of those other networks?
Well, actually, believe it or not, the Outdoor Channel is actually considering doing a bit of that. So, you know, one of the reasons why Uncharted has a, you know, it's meant to be, I guess I'll take a step back here. You know, at the hardcore hunting shows, if you're not a hunter, you're not going to watch them. Uncharted is a hunting show, for sure. But, you know, kind of if you're still into the outdoors, you can kind of watch it and you, you know, you don't have to, just because you don't hunt doesn't mean you don't like Uncharted. Or that's the idea behind it. Something like Carter's War is even more in that direction. It's supposed to be, it's supposed to appeal to hunters and to people who don't hunt. And the Outdoor Channel is definitely sort of, you know, looking in that direction. They're not abandoning hunters by in any respect at all, but they want to make content that appeals to a wider audience on at least some of their nights.
So they've kind of gotten wise to something going on in hunting television, which is you could take a pee break at any point in the show, but the last 5 minutes you might want to be on the couch if you want to see actual, you know, action. Whereas with Uncharted, you want to wait to the commercial before, you know, if you're going to get up to take a pee break.
I hope so. Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of great hunting show content out there. I'm more talking about, you know, when I first got started. I think the industry is leaps and bounds, you know, ahead of where it was, say, 5 years ago when I started.
There was a moment when I realized, I was like, man, this guy is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And that is when you did for the professionals, the 4-part series in Nepal.
Yeah.
And I was watching that, and I was watching it with she's my girlfriend at the time, my wife now. And she was a vegetarian at the time and had no interest in hunting at all. And we were watching that, and after the first episode, she was like, I cannot wait to see the second episode.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Yeah.
So yeah, was that kind of a changing, defining moment for you doing that series of 4?
Yeah, that was absolutely a life-changing moment. Yeah, 100%.
It could have been an epic film.
Yeah, yeah. So before Nepal, again, we were just kind of we were going along with a sort of the same professionals mold, and it seems weird to me now. But at that time, I never really considered so much that it would be a given that people might want to see, you know, longer form content or content that is like a series that continues on, or content like in the third episode of Nepal where there is no kill shot, there's nothing dies.
Story driven.
Yeah. And you know, now I'm like, yeah, I want more of that. And that's so obvious. But back then it wasn't. And so Dad and I thought, you know, maybe we can make a show that's not just a 1-part thing, but 4 parts. And let's do it in a crazy place like Nepal. And actually, that Nepal series was our pilot for the Uncharted series that came after it.
And was that received pretty well from the Outdoor Channel? Well, I'm guessing it was because you ended up getting Uncharted. But tell us a little bit because you put a lot of eggs in that basket, I'm guessing. You know, you're next on the line.
Yeah, hugely, yeah. Yeah, that was a – okay, so – and also on a personal level, Nepal for me was just – that was crazy. I mean, that's the stuff I love doing. You know, I don't do a lot of it, unfortunately, but, you know, waking up on the side of those mountains and just having the whole world at your fingertips, I mean, that's – with a camera, that's awesome. And cinematically and visually and everything, it's amazing. So that was a huge turning point for me. It was probably the point in my life where I really thought, you know, yeah, I can really do this stuff. Like I can really do something that I really feel is really cool. So I don't even remember what the question was now. It was all the eggs were in one basket.
Yeah, how did people receive it? Because there had to have been a little bit of you with, what if everyone hates this?
Yeah,
even if you're 99% sure, there's that 1% in the back of your head going, well,
yes,
I guess I could go back to writing acoustic love songs if this doesn't work out.
Yeah, well, that didn't work out either, so I really had nothing to fall back on.
So all the eggs were in there.
Yeah, every egg was in there. And I'm getting specific here, but if you look back on the trailer for Nepal, the very opening shot isn't a shot of any mountain or anything. It's a shot of a train.
Yeah.
The inside of a train terminal in South Korea, I think. And I mean, that's really weird. And I remember putting that together, being like, this is weird. Like, I don't know if this is going to fly. But yeah, the reception was really good for Nepal. It was excellent. Probably to this day, it's probably still, I would think, our most well-received shows we've done, no matter what.
There's a film that's come out since. Do you know who Jimmy Chin is?
Yes, the climber, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen the film Maru? He just came out with. He did it with Conrad Anchor.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't seen it. I've been wanting to. It's on my top list to see.
It's really good. Really good.
Yeah, it was out the Sherpa Cinema guys.
Is that what they go? Different. Camp 4. I think they're out of Camp 4 Park, Creative. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So he did that, and I was actually watching it, and it's the first time I've been watching an epic climbing movie, you know, mountaineering movie like that, and thought, this reminds me of that hunting film. It was the one from Nepal. I was looking back because they're in Nepal, you know.
Sure.
And I'm like, this reminds me. And I'd also seen a show of from Uncharted where it was your dad. He was getting, I think it might have been again in Nepal or somewhere in the mountains, and he had to get somewhere to these guys to hunt a goat, and he had to ride on like a truck that down this road that was like half a lane wide through then to a lake. And it was just this really long journey just to try to get to where you could start the actual hunt.
Yeah.
And it really reminded me of like their journey to get to the mountain. And I was like, wow, you know, that's good hunting television when you're actually now watching these really good outdoor films and thinking, and it's reminding you of these hunting shows. That had never happened to me before, to where, it's usually like, you know, we should be more like them. Now it's like, wow, it's been captured. It's now I'm being reminded of a great hunting film by watching a great climbing film.
Yeah, that's one of the best compliments I ever got for our stuff. Yeah, that's those guys are heroes to me. So that's a big deal. Yeah, yeah, I've never heard that before. So thank you.
So with all your, like you said, I mean, you're still hashing out episodes now for Carter's War.
Yeah.
Take us through a typical day. Like if today was just, you're at it all day. Are you guys, I mean, are you in the final stages of just putting the dot in the I's and crossing the T's? How many hours goes into each episode from your chair?
Okay. So, again, I'll take a step back. So when I started doing this stuff, you know, you can make an episode of television like this in something like, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. You know, you could really, I remember under crunch time, you could do it in a week if you were really, you know, forced to. Those are long days, but you could do it. Nowadays with, you know, the competition, quality, everything like that, hour-long format, storyline driven stuff. I don't even know what the hours would be for an episode. I know for Carter's War, let me think here. So first of all, I should mention Carter's War is not just me. That's a whole team of guys. Those are guys I've been working on Uncharted that have now started working on Carter's War. We hire more guys yearly, basically. It's used to do everything in my apartment. Now we're doing an actual studio. And that we have, I think, 7 guys now. And I know for sure the one lead editor, his name's Sean, he just did a 200-hour, I think it was 200 hours in 2 weeks, just these last weeks here. So crazy, crazy, crazy hours. And a typical day would involve me going into an office right now. So we're in the post side of things. So that means everything's been shot for the show. We're just basically putting those shows together, putting the content together. And an episode would take anywhere from 1 month to probably 3 months to put it all together. Wow. I'd say. Yeah. That's you know, those are long days. We don't mess around. So.
No, that's, I mean, you can see it, you know, with the end result, because the attention to detail and the perspective you guys are bringing out, like Will said, is just, you know, we've talked with other people on this show, and we've talked about how the hunting industry is very much 3 to 5 years behind many other, you know, just different platforms out there, different, you know, so many other things. And this, watching some of your guys' work, it's like Will said, it's just, it's very good, you know. And I think that I'm excited to see, as because like you said, the competitiveness amongst your, people like yourself and on your side of the industry, trying to stay innovative and trying to stay forward thinking. I mean, I'm excited to see what's to come, you know, from
yeah,
here.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think that we're behind in some ways for sure. You know, the 3 to 5 years, I've heard that. I think that's probably right from a technical standpoint. But, you know, I think there's some really cool stuff that comes out of the hunting industry. There's some, you know, we talk about Jimmy Chin and all that, and those guys are dealing in you know, they're dealing in a situation where they have, you know, millions and millions of people that follow them, and, you know, Nat Geo and all that. I don't know how many, you know, what their space is that they're working within, but, you know, those guys have big budgets. In our industry, it isn't that big. I mean, it's big, but it's not nowhere close to that size. And some of the stuff that comes, I mean, the Heartland Bowhunter guys do great work. Like there's a lot of great work that with sort of like a raw emotion that you don't really find. I don't see anyway on some of the bigger networks nowadays. At least not very often.
I think hunting is really starting to enter into the golden age of hunting. And I'm not going to say, you know, just television, but hunting media per se, where it won't just be the shows, but also the film and, you know, the photography and everything that ties into that. I think you're going to start seeing this new generation, people our age, really kind of taking it over and developing it the way you see things develop in all these other sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely a true thing. And this has been happening for a few years, but nowadays, I mean, you can roll out of bed and grab your Canon 60D or whatever it is and hop out and make a great film. You know, like you don't, there's no technical barriers anymore, which is very cool.
No, and the editing software is there for you, you know, if you want to get into that sort of thing. You know, yeah. Like you say, you don't have to have this big production and big setup to make it happen.
No, yeah, I get asked, that's probably one thing I get asked a lot is, you know, what do I need to go out and film a hunt? And the answer is, you know, you mostly just need to really focus on filming rather than maybe the shooting. You got to just switch perspectives a bit, and that's it. I mean, you go in a store, buy a camera, DSLR, whatever it is, something that looks a little bit cinematic if you want it to, and then get a program on your computer and you're set.
I said today, I was talking to a buddy who's up here filming for Dangerous Cow Company I work with, and I was saying, you know, one of the things I think that's most overrated and trips people up when it comes to filming hunts is killing a big animal. I think they focus way too much on a big animal than they should on the story. I think if you pay more attention to that story and what's driving the story and its arc, you're going to get a better film.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean you get more viewers. I think a lot of people want to see the big animals. But, I totally agree. Story, I mean, and trust me, I'm learning this, you know, as we evolve and what we're producing. But story is king. I mean, I like the cinematic stuff. That's kind of my probably true passion. But the story stuff is where the – story stuff is what makes people, how do I describe this? A good story is what makes people watch something. It's what makes people sit in a seat and you know, walk away from that experience thinking, you know, that was a great use of my last half hour, last hour.
And that's one thing I think about too is you as a production company or as a show, you're competing with every other television show out there. You know, it's not just hunting shows. Mm-hmm. You have to step up, you know, or have stepped up your game, you know, or change it however you want to word it to compete with them. You know, I think it's better to say instead of just taking from within the hunting industry, you're able to now draw from without the hunting industry.
From without that. I think so. No, that's right.
That sound right? Did I get that one?
Yeah, and I guess the counter side is that, you know, we are more competitive, and those other channels are looking at our content thinking, yeah, you know, these guys have something going on. Maybe we can put a show that's more outdoors focused, you know, on our channels. And I think that's happened in recent years, and they've been pretty successful with it.
I got a question, and this is one I'm stealing from Tim Ferriss's podcast. If – if you were to go back 10 years in time, what would you tell the Brandlin Shockey of 10 years ago?
I would tell the Brandlin Shockey of 10 years ago to put down the guitar and pick up a camera, because I wish I had that extra 5 years. I got started too late. I think that's, yeah, I mean, I would say, what would I say? I would say put down the guitar, pick up a camera, and do stuff that inspires you, that really gets you motivated to wake up every morning. And, you know, I didn't have that when I was that young. I've been 19 at the time.
So if you were to go back then to the 15-year-old Brandlin Shockey, what advice would you give him? Yeah, 15. That's a formative age.
Oh, that is, yeah. Heck, I mean, I was in high school?
Freshman, probably.
Yeah, well, we're in Canada. I don't actually know what freshman is, but it was
I guess ninth grade. So I don't know. Do you have ninth grade?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I don't know.
Same grades, just the freshman, senior, and junior.
No, we just play hockey. Just hockey, straight.
That's
straight
right. On. That's what I do. Yeah, we live in our igloos and play hockey. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of look back at those times, and I don't really think of myself any differently. I think when I was that young, I mean, that's pretty young. I'm sure. Was thinking about other things. I don't know. Again, I just say do stuff that's inspiring to you. I mean, if you're going out there and doing stuff every day that you don't like doing, you're not going to be good at it, and you're not going to be, you know, happy at it. Hold on. Sorry, guys.
All right.
I just lost you. I got a call coming.
That's all right.
Here? You guys got me still?
I got Phil.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, guys. That was actually Ivan Carter. I just denied his call.
Ha! Ivan Carter? Take that.
I have more important things to do.
Right. Sorry if you're saving Africa. I've got other things going on.
Yeah, exactly. I got to talk about my high school days. but again, just do stuff that's inspiring. And I guess that would be my advice to people of any age. Do stuff that you want to do, and that's, you know, ideally you think you can be really good at. You think you can do stuff that people think is good.
So do you think that a channel like the Outdoor Channel is making a conscious decision that, yes, we want more content like this, this more broader reaching, a little more artistic, story-driven content?
Yeah.
Where do you see the industry then going with that?
Well, I think that that's either going to work or it's not. And obviously, you know, I'm on the side that very much hopes it works. And I believe it will. It's an interesting thing, because the more you do that, the less you have that sort of niche, right? So if I'm a TV viewer, I make a choice every day in which channel to watch. And that's going to be the Outdoor Channel if I'm a hunter, currently right now, Sportsman Channel, something like that. But, you know, when that stuff starts to change a little bit, and the Outdoor Channel has more just purely outdoor-focused content, then that decision becomes a little bit less clear. And vice versa, if I'm a Nat Geo guy, I watch Nat Geo every day because they have outdoor content, and then I see that the Outdoor Channel also has outdoor content, you know, that decision might be a little bit harder for me as well. And I think the success in this is going to obviously have more people coming from the sort of that outdoor space, that Nat Geo History Channel, Discovery Channel space, and still holding on to your core audience, which is all your hunters, your fishers, all that, on the Outdoor Channel.
Does that make sense? That makes sense. I like it. What's your favorite project you've ever worked on?
Okay, favorite project, like just any project or like a TV show, anything?
Let's do both. We'll go in general, and then we'll do TV show.
Okay. The Nepal series were definitely my favorite project to work on, just personally. It's just because of the journey that we took, and I'm not just talking about a physical journey, but just a mental journey. I mean, you're going up there and you're walking around at 16,000 up to 17,000 feet. And I'm not really knowing at that time, you know, if I can handle that stuff. I didn't know if people would receive a show like that favorably. And, you know, that was a point in my life where I was really, really, really inspired to do this. Like I was waking up at 3 to go, you know, do this, the Starscapes and all that, which at that time were like a new thing, and I was all crazy and I was all excited about it. Nowadays, you know, you see it every day. And
everyone's got a Starscape. Everyone's got the slow motion. Everyone's got a drone.
Yeah. And this was like pre all that stuff. You know, Starscape stuff was just coming out. A guy named Tom Lowe did a piece, you know, and I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. I got to do it. So that was a project that, yeah, I just, for me, that was awesome. Then on a personal level, personal project, I sent this to you, Will, but I did a quick 3-minute piece on Cam Haines a few years ago. It was in 2013. And again, this is just at the point when slow motion was coming out, and I was all excited. I got my slow-mo camera and drove down to see him in Oregon. And he's a super cool guy, and I got to spend three days with him. And he took me through his training regime, talked a bit about what he believes in. And I think the piece from that, which never went anywhere and never got picked up as a show or anything, was probably one of the things that I'm most proud of doing, for sure.
Why do you think it never got picked up?
Well, yeah, actually, I think partially I'm at fault for that. So nowadays, if someone came to me and said, hey, we want you to make a 3-minute piece and we're going to use that to sell a TV show, I wouldn't go and make a very creative, inspirational type piece. I'd make something that says, hey, I'm Cam Haines. This is who I am. This is what I do every day. These are my problems. These are my issues. This is my family. You know, stuff that's more story driven. Whereas the piece that we did is something that I think is really cool, but may have been a little bit too sort of on the creative side for, you know, selling to networks and selling to sponsors and things like that.
Yeah, I think, 2013, the whole Hunter athlete movement, I think, has gained a lot of steam since then. You know,
probably,
I would think it would be a lot better received. I could be wrong. I think it would be a lot better received today than maybe in 2013.
Well, I'll tell you this. If there's anyone that's going to make something successful in the face of adversity, it's Cam Haines. He's got the drive to do it for sure. So I very much hope that happens, and we'll be the first person calling him saying, hey, do you need a producer if a show like that does get picked up?
I think we could use a hunting fitness related show. I do.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Go on.
No, I agree too. I was going to say, I think that, you know, having Branley work on it too would be top of what people's to watch list.
So what would you think? What would that show look like to you guys?
I masterminded this. I figured it out for you.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
I've been setting this all up just so was hoping you would eventually work around to asking me how we would do this.
I'm actually going to write this down, Will, if you don't mind.
Hey, we're recording it. I'll send you the recording.
Oh, yeah, excellent. Perfect.
You can watch the video version, too, to get all this. So I was thinking successful outdoor shows, right? And appealing to a broad audience, because I think the only problem you have is Cam Haines relating to enough people might be a little tough because of the geographic location, age, you know, everything that goes into that. If you were to say do it the way Axemen does it or Gold Rush or some of those other successful, you know, outdoor mountain men, if you were to do it like that, where you have, say, 5 hunters from different parts of the country, you know, one being Cam, one being this other guy, you know, all fitness related, but all separately working towards their hunt. Like, say, Cam's got a big elk hunt planned, X. This other guy has a whitetail hunt planned here. This guy's going to this, you know, Arizona. Like, everyone's going somewhere slightly different, but you're covering the entire lead up, the entire adversity, and you could do, you know, flashbacks. You could start it from wherever. I think that you would relate to a lot more people. And maybe, you know, get a woman involved, a fit woman in the show. I think you could really draw in a lot more eyeballs.
See, I actually think that's a really, really, really good idea. And I should have had you off air for this so I can steal it for myself.
I would have recorded from the minute I started talking. I've had great ideas stolen before. Actually, I wouldn't even mind one bit if you stole that idea, because I'd watch it. I would watch it. Cool. I would be happy it's out there, because there's actually a little video. I'm starting this website, Iron Wolf Athletics. It's going to be related to outdoor athletes, not just hunter athletes, but, you know, I'm also into rock climbing, mountaineering, kayaking, all this stuff. So I want a place everybody can kind of go, and also they can see hunters aren't the misconception a lot of people have. You know, that's one thing I think Cam has done better than almost everyone else in this industry, yeah, is changing how people look at hunters. You know, he's not, and I don't even, you know, I'd say stereotypical, because all the hunters I know, the guys out west like Phil, everyone's been better shape than I am. And I'm in pretty good shape,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think he's representing a population of hunters that haven't been heard for a long time, or haven't been heard of ever. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of people happy he's out there and doing it. And it's going to keep gaining momentum. As I kind of lose my train of thought here, I'm just trying to keep it going before anyone notices.
Yeah, I've been doing that too on the podcast. That's kind of that's the key, is just keep going. And
I started talking, and I was like, man, Cam Haynes is great. Where was I going with this?
I think you're saying that direction is something that Cam Haynes, you know, basically is doing a great job on, but only partially reaches in that show way.
So the video idea I had, I think I was going on that, is I want to film each hunter, separate hunters, and be like, what do you think the biggest misconception about a hunter is? And then someone to be like, they're all lazy. And then it shows a hunter out there busting his ass, you know, setting up whatever they're doing or charging the mountain. All hunters are fat. Have some guys, you know, like Cam's six-pack is jacked working out. All hunters are, you know, whatever. And then show the opposite. Because I think a lot of hunters are kind of tired of the perception that's out there and really hungry to change it.
Yeah, I don't say this often. I think that's a really brilliant idea. I really do. I saw a TV show a while ago. It was on like the
NFL Draft. That's Natural Born Hunter podcast, ladies and gentlemen. That's all we have tonight.
No, I mean, I really do. I saw a show. I don't know what it's called. It was called Draft or something. It was on the NFL, and I went through all these guys' lives as they're going through the drafting process. And it was great. I mean, it very cinematically shot. Went to these guys' different homes, showed their training regimens, and all these guys a little bit different. I think that kind of format for what you're talking about would be great. And, yeah, I mean, you could easily do it. I actually will probably follow up with that. I think that's a really, really good idea.
Well, if you're looking for a bearded hunter in the Northeast, I have you.
I was actually going to ask Phil if he wanted to be the guy, one of the in-shape hunter guys who's going to be on the show, maybe.
I won't lie. He's better than me anyways. And with a name like Mendoza, he's going to get you all those Latin people, too.
That's right, yeah. All the female viewers.
Oh, he'll get the female viewers. Don't you worry about that.
Well, not to change the subject too much about Phil and women. I'm happily married to myself, but I've got some questions on that. Getting to work with guys like Cam and your dad. I mean, your dad's one of the most iconic hunters that I know of since I've been hunting, right? And the question I have for you with in regards to your dad is, I've got multiple businesses. One of them is a family business, of which I work with my dad, and we work very closely together, and I respect him like to the nth degree, right? But there's things that we disagree on.
Yeah.
And how do you and your dad work together? Is it pretty much, you know, are you in charge when it comes to the, you know, the ideas and the creative side of stuff? And is he just a pretty face on TV? Or give us a little insight into that.
Yeah. So my dad is a badass. I mean, sorry, can I say it on the podcast? I don't.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, this is uncensored.
Okay, cool. No, but he really is. I'm the same way. I mean, I have nothing but respect for my dad. And he, you know, when I talk about a hard worker that's driven to do something, that is him. I mean, he travels, whatever, 280 days a year. He never complains. He does hard, ugly stuff over and over and over again. And so working with him, I usually like, actually, he's excellent. He's been in this industry for a long time. And, you know, back in the early hunting adventure days, I mean, that's all him doing that stuff, right? You know, he'd be working with editors very closely to make those shows happen. Obviously show a lot of talent and effort on the editing side, but he, you know, is in terms of like telling stories, you know, even in those early days, I mean, that's a lot of him, all the humor with their grandparents, you know, that's him driving that stuff. So if he says, hey, you know, I don't really like this part of the show, you know, myself and the editors here, we're gonna listen to that. That said, I totally get what you mean. I mean, working very closely with your dad all the time, I think is, you know, just because of that relationship can be difficult for sure. So I try and work as autonomously as we can. I actually work out of Vancouver. He lives in Vancouver Island here, so it's a fair ways away. And on the earlier stuff, he would have a lot more input in what we're doing. Nowadays, he still has input, but with his, you know, with the schedule that he has right now, it's not practical to you know, have him in the edit suite every day looking over cuts and stuff. So, you know, we send him cuts of what we're doing. We'll get his feedback, and we'll, you know, if we can, we'll implement a lot of those. So he's still very relevant, but
he's still the godfather. Then he's just essentially granting you permission from.
Yeah, no. My dad is definitely a godfather. You know, less so for Carter's War is more, quite a bit more autonomous for sure. But now, you know, we're working pretty close with Ivan on that. So.
That's cool. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I've never met your dad, and it's but just. I had a friend of mine actually went for a workout yesterday, and I do this podcast and another one, and he says, I don't even need to ask you how you've been, man. He says, I hear you on the radio all the time, on my radio. Oh, so cool. It's one of those deals with your dad. It's like seeing him on TV for so many years. If I walked up to him in a situation, it'd feel like I half knew him because of how much I've seen him on the screen, you know?
Yeah, so, you know what the funny thing is? A lot of people that do come up to him like that, they'll say stuff that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't really remember doing, you know, like, or it's kind of like, cause he travels just so much from place to place to place, you know, you kind of unfortunately lose track of, you know, the specifics, and someone will come up and say, hey, you know, I just saw you doing this in, you know, wherever, Afghanistan. And, you know, sometimes after we'll say, you know, I don't remember doing that.
So what shows do you spend your time watching?
Ooh, okay, sure. So I don't watch many hunting shows. Actually, I don't watch any. So I can say that right off the bat. A big reason is we don't get the Outdoor Channel up here in Canada. So I actually couldn't watch it even if I wanted to. I watch a lot of movies. I watch very little TV.
All right, let's hear it. Top three movies.
You're going to lose on my hardcore hunter people that respect me and everything. I just say I played acoustic love songs.
Love Actually, number one.
Love Actually, that would be it. Actually, that's a really good movie. I like
it
that.
It is a really good movie. No, I love those English rom-coms.
Yeah, every self-respecting guy would that movie. I don't know. I watch a lot of
Let's hear it. Top three movies. Let's hear them.
All right. Lord of the Rings is probably my number one of all time.
All right.
It's goody.
I like movies like that. Really cinematic. Peter Jackson is awesome. Top three. I'm a Star Wars fan. I like the sort of spacey type stuff.
Did you see the new Star Wars?
I haven't, and you can't talk about it, not even on the podcast, because I'm going to see it tomorrow night.
I wouldn't do that to people.
Okay, yeah, we have a rule at the edit suite. We're not allowed to talk about it. I haven't – I don't know what the number three would be. I mean, it's – I kind of like almost – any movie that's kind of, I don't know, kind of more like action sort of based movies with stuff going on that's really cinematic. I don't even know what my third would be.
Like Michael Bay type stuff?
No, not. Well, I mean, I like Michael Bay, I like Transformers, but more like Guy Ritchie movies.
All right, got you.
I mean, normally I can just list off directors like that. I'm kind of drawing blanks, but yeah, I mean, I like all kinds of stuff.
I just want to throw it out there. If you're ever in Denver and you want to come watch them, Outdoor Channel, Sportsman Channel, you can come over to my house.
Anytime. You know what? They're actually headquartered in Denver. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just there. That's awesome. I'll take you up on that. I love that.
you know what? We'll hang out.
Yeah, Phil and Brandon are becoming best friends. Next thing you know, you guys are hosting a podcast. I'm out singing acoustic love songs, trying to earn a living.
Hey, well, actually, Phil, we can talk about that show idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll go work out. There's some killer spots we can go. I can go show you our stomping grounds.
Perfect. perfect. Yeah.
You guys can work out together, shoot together, talk about all the guys you used to know that you don't associate with anymore from the old days.
That Will guy.
I'll tag you on the Instagram post, though.
If you could. Hey, just let me run your social media, guys. Yeah. Just to be, you know, involved would be a dream come true.
So, you know, feeding off the your favorite movies and that kind of thing.
Sure.
I mean, you grew up in a hunting family. You work in the outdoor hunting filming industry. When you do get some time off, what are your activities you like to partake in, you know, from a standpoint outside of hunting in that kind of work, you know, type atmosphere?
Sure. So obviously, I mean, I'm a married man now. I love spending time with my wife, Ashley, and that is obviously number one. But other than that, stuff that's still related to sort of the industry, very into photography, cinematography. I mean, that's stuff that I'm not interested in just because that I do that for work. I really am interested in it. I can't tell you the number of hours that I've spent looking in blogs and reading about how other directors and producers and things, you know, make something happen. I do it less nowadays, but when I started off, that's almost all I do. I mean, I'd be on gear pages every day. I mean, I know everything about any camera and lens and setup and directors and all that. So I don't know if that counts as work, but basically especially in the early days when I wasn't actually physically creating an episode, I would be 100% online reading up about how to do it better, or I'd be outside shooting, you know, learning practical things.
You're an addict.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that was, again, it was probably just after university where that kind of mentality really hit me, where, you know, my buddies were, and there's nothing wrong with this, but, you know, they're playing poker and just kind of having fun. And I just thought, you know, I've had enough of that. I'm going to try and focus on doing something. Read some books by Ayn Rand at the time, which influenced me a lot. Just went from there.
I want to go back to this Guy Ritchie thing for a little bit. Because I am also a big Guy Ritchie fan.
Yeah, he's awesome.
If you had to pick Rock and Roller, mm-hmm. Snatch, or Lock Stock, favorite of the three?
It's not Snatch. I like Lock Stock. Rock and Roller for me is awesome. I mean, it's awesome. That opening scene where it's just like that wonder and the guy's kind of doing his monologue and he's sitting there smoking whatever he's smoking and it kind of slowly moves forward to him and it kind of goes to the front and he says, I don't know what he says, but you know, I want to be a rock and roller. That's awesome. Awesome.
Yep.
And also Guy Ritchie's style. I mean, that's a guy that is a complete, utter talent. I mean, he looked at, you know, you can look, I think there's a couple ways you can create stuff. You can look at what other people are doing and you can literally try and figure out how exactly they're doing and copy it. Or you can do something like what Guy Ritchie did and look at what other people are doing and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to do my wonder with the monologue and the cool kind of jazzy music with the weird cutting and stuff because I think it's cool.
The stories were also, and the characters were very different than anything being done too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the thing about it is I'm sure Guy Ritchie has influences and you look at those and you think, oh, okay, this is where he got those, you know, some of those pieces from for sure. But
for sure.
In terms of mainstream stuff, yeah, I don't know anything that looks like that.
You ever watch Layer Cake?
Which I was just going to say, actually, Larry King does look a little bit like that, yeah.
Well, the guy who was the producer for Guy Ritchie films, mm-hmm. he directed that. And I think Layer Cake's probably my number one, even though it's not Guy Ritchie. It's like, I love Layer Cake. You ever, you know, his Daniel Craig's opening monologue when he's walking through the drugstore talking about how all this
stuff. All the shells are changing, yeah.
Yes, I just.
Totally badass, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I bring that up all the time now because of all the legalization going around. It's like, it's not going to be worth millions. It's going to be worth fucking billions.
And I'm blanking on that guy's name. I think it was like Matthew something. But he did the new X-Men movie too, which was great. Or one of the new ones, the First Class or something.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. His name's Matthew something, I think.
Now, you also like Westerns, right?
I do like Westerns, although I can't claim to have a huge love for the super old ones because I just don't know them very well.
All right, so John Wayne or Clint Eastwood?
Clint Eastwood, definitely.
Favorite Clint Eastwood Western?
Fistful of Dollars, I would think. I mean, I like all
really? Three. That's what? That's yeah. The favorite?
Man, I mean, Unforgiven's really good, but I don't know. I just – I didn't realize that these movies existed until I sat down. And I don't know, it was my dad or someone said, hey, you need to watch these spaghetti westerns. And I sat down and watched Fistful of Dollars, and I thought, this is awesome. This is incredible. And, I mean, it's all three of those, right, where the bad guy's holding his little locket thing and it's playing a little song, and they're all looking at each other and all greasy. It's wicked.
It's the old Mexican standoff. That's, like, where it comes from, right? Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's Fistful of Silver Dollars for – is it a – for
a few dollars more.
A few dollars more, and then The Good, the Bad, the Ugly is the third movie. Yeah.
Yeah, which was all – I mean, they're all great.
I'd agree. But if I'm honest with you, I think High Plains Drifter, my number one.
I'm going to be honest with you. I actually haven't seen that.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know what else I haven't seen is Outlaw Josie Wales. I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen two of the best Clint Eastwood Westerns yet?
Well, that probably explains why my number one is Fistful of Dollars.
I was going to say, it's like you don't even like Outlaw Josie Wales better than a Fistful of Silver Dollars?
Yeah.
Great, dude. High Plains Drifter is a must-see for anyone that enjoys Westerns.
Okay. And is that whole, like, John Wayne thing,
I don't get John Wayne. I'll be honest with you, and I'm sure there's guys out there right now who are just turning off their podcasting device and, like, I'm done with this show.
Yeah.
But I never understood the appeal of John Wayne. But I think the problem is I saw Clint Eastwood first, and honest, who's the better cowboy? It's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, and that's what I think, too. I think if you're growing up in the, whatever, 40s and you see John Wayne on TV, that's your first cowboy. You know, you probably think of, like, that total Western badass, no-holds-barred guy as being John Wayne. But it's Clint Eastwood for sure in reality.
You know who is another great cowboy?
Who?
Val Kilmer is Doc Holliday.
Yeah, he was incredible, and that was an incredible movie, too.
Tombstone. Yeah. Phenomenal Western.
Yeah. You can be my Huckleberry.
That's one of the best lines from any Western ever.
Yeah, unbelievable. You know what the cool thing is? Like, how do you write that?
I have no idea. I don't even – I wouldn't come up with Huckleberry if my life depended on it.
No, and that, like – and you know, my wife has gotten used to this now, but, you know, when we watch movies, that's all – I just want to stop and be like, how did they do that? Or, like, who's the mind behind that? How did they come up with that line? Why would you say that? But it's so perfect.
You stop the movie, start going off on that, and she's just looking over at you like, push play or I'm going to stab you.
Yeah, yeah. The worst is in movie theaters when I'm leaning over and that's the worst.
What do you think the director was thinking at this point?
Yeah, no, I do that constantly. I mean, I think that's one of the cooler things for me, you know, and the reason why I like watching movies, I think, is because the amount of time and talent that goes into them is just crazy.
One thing my wife hates is I'll sit there and be like, man, I love this character. Like, whenever someone's, like, really nailed a character, like, I'll just be like, this guy is great. Are you watching this? Yeah, this guy is just killing it. And I'm like, oh, man, I love this guy. And if somebody, like, I don't know if you watch American Horror Stories, but it's a television show I watched since it started. It was really good and just goes downhill. But I feel like I'm committed to it, so I have to finish out the season. And Lady Gaga's in it, and I hate her in it. And I'm just like, I hate her so much. And she'll just look over and be like, I know. I get it.
Yeah, they don't like it when you're mom.
I get it. No.
It's annoying, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess people don't like their shows being interrupted by some asshole sitting next to them. I don't get it.
No.
Phil, are you a big Western fan?
Yeah, not so much. Not that I dislike it. I just haven't been around the TV very much the last 7+ years.
I don't know that you even need to be a Western fan. I like the idea of a Western, actually. Like, I like the idea of one man sort of really facing a ton of trouble and having to get himself out of it by basically, you know, whatever, barricading himself in a room and you know, having the Federales outside and calling him out and having to go. And, you know, there's something so, like, iconic about that I think is cool. And I think that's cool, not even just Western movies, like Skyfall, which is probably, you know, actually could be my number three favorite movie. It's incredible. That, the end of that movie, I mean, that's kind of like a Western
movie. Whoa, I haven't seen it yet. I've actually, for some reason, my dad's from Canada,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Hey, it's cool. The only the thing about having a Canadian parent is I always get corrected on my grammar. And one thing I've noticed with your dad is he speaks very well.
He does.
And I heard him on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I was just like, man, this guy is probably the best voice for hunters out there. Like, it's pretty obvious how he got where he is, you know, really intelligent, really articulate. And I'm just listening to him, and it's like listening to my dad. And I also work with my dad, and I can't tell you how many times I'll say something, and I'll just get corrected on it. Like, oh, I just.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad is like super. He's very, very well read. I mean, that's because he travels so much. You know, that's a lot of what he does. You know, and he doesn't read throwaway books. He's reading. If he's going to a place like whatever Iceland, he reads the entire history. Knows everything about it. So yeah, he uses words all the time that I have no idea what he's what he says at all. And it's I don't know. I think that stuff's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't do it myself, but my dad. He reads an enormous the amount of news he stays up on, even back in Canada. He still gets Maclean's, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's like the Canadian version of Time magazine, which all they really do is crap on America a bunch.
Unfortunately, I don't subscribe to Maclean's.
No,
so for partially that reason, but yeah.
So he reads just a ton. And another thing, you know, I've noticed about Canadians is they're travelers.
Well, we have really long, horrible winters, so you try and get out of them.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Up in your igloos can't be fun for all of you.
No. I think that actually is partly to do with it. I mean, I think that going away during winter here is a pretty big thing. And also, there's a lot of outdoors, right? We have, I think we only have like 3 people per square mile here, so there's a lot more people. Well, I don't know about more people, but a lot of people that like, even if they're not hunters, but they like going out and hopping on a, you know, a ski-doo or, you know, just hiking.
Makes sense. He's actually spent a large amount of time in Africa, and I grew up hearing about Africa.
Your dad did.
What's that?
Your dad.
Yeah, he hitchhiked he didn't hitchhike, but he started his trip, him and his best friend, when they were in their early 20s, and they started in Germany, and they made their way down to Ethiopia, and then they hitchhiked down to South Africa.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, and the stories he has and the slides he has are unbelievable.
He was hitchhiking in Ethiopia?
Hitchhiked through, all the way down Africa. And he has stories about they would ride along in the back of this truck, and they were just helping the guy who was driving the truck, and they'd stop on the side of the road, and people would just come out of the middle of nowhere, take whatever it was, you know, give him stuff to take to the next place. And that's what they did all night long. And then at the end of the night, they took him in, and it was a system of houses and huts, one from the other. And my dad's like, honestly, if we never made it out of there, no one would have known where to find us, didn't know what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But they took us in, and they were feeding us around the fire. And he's like, I had no idea what was being handed to me, but I just ate it. I just ate it, and I smiled, and we made it out of there all right. And it's always been one of those places to me that just seems kind of magical. It has a little bit of that unknown, untamed about it, more so than I think any other place in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Africa is. I've spent a bit of time in Africa. I haven't spent anything like what say my dad has spent there, but it's. I mean, you read those old books, right, about whoever, I don't know, Hemingway going over there, and it's even, you know, back then it was a backwards place, and now those types of places, even though they're disappearing fast now, they still exist. I mean, you can walk right out there and be lost with the Maasai or whatever other tribe, and they're living just like they did, you know, a few hundred years ago, although with the one exception is cell phones. A lot of them have cell phones.
I've heard that recently. I think maybe on NPR I was listening to the other day, and they said –
Yeah, probably, yeah.
There's more cell phones than toilets. Or maybe it was Joe Rogan's podcast they were talking about.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I 100% believe that. But that all said, I mean, they're dealing with – actually, one of the cool things in Carter's War, we have an episode on crocodiles down there. And a lot of people that live there, they face dangers that we in the Western world, we haven't even thought about, you know, for thousands of years. I mean, we hear a lion roar, and that seems scary to us. But it seems scary because, you know – millions of years ago or thousands of years ago, depending on what you believe, we were around animals that would kill us, that looked at us as food. And nowadays that doesn't happen here, but it does happen over there on a very frequent basis. It's crazy.
Well, and I think that's part of what's making the United States soft.
Sure.
Modernization of everything and people forgetting what it's like to sacrifice and struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
I think I wasn't born into a hunting family. My dad doesn't hunt. My grandfather hunted a little, but he passed away when I was really too young to start. And I think it's one of the best decisions I've ever made is becoming a hunter.
Cool, I love that.
And because I was one of these people, and I'll admit, I looked at hunting. I was like, how hard can hunting be? Look at all these deer around here. How hard can this be?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I started hunting, and I didn't kill a deer until my last day of the season. And I cannot tell you how hard I worked. It was one of the most satisfying moments in my life. And yeah. I worked my ass off. I froze my ass off. It was tough. But there's no better meal I ever had than when I ate that deer. And it's really kind of changed my perspective on a lot of things and who I am as a person for the better, I think.
And I think that's totally awesome. I love that. That to me is like one of the coolest stories you can hear, because I totally agree. I mean, I think there's some – actually, I'll tell you a story today. I don't know if you guys know this, but the studio here is located in Vancouver. So I live in the city, so – I have to be careful. I don't want to say that I'm out hunting every day, because I'm not. But, you know, I was walking by a store, and there's all these people outside with their big signs, and they're saying, you know, don't go in there because, you know, they sell fur and all that. And, you know, they're sitting there with the signs, and they got their leather shoes on, and, you know, I'm sure they all drive emissions vehicles, and, you know, it's not like they don't have an impact on the environment. And these poor people inside are trying to sell coats made out of fur that, you know, heck, we basically got started as a country because people came over here for the fur trade. And it's just, I think it's so easy nowadays to just lose perspective, you know, and you just don't, it's just hard to stick with those roots and, you know, to know what it feels like to actually hunt a deer, like you said, and get on the last day and actually feel like you're a little bit desperate to get it. And, yeah, I think we need more of that.
I was making deals with God left and right.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, though, where I think you mentioned the people with the fur, you know, anti-fur stuff or anti-hunting, whatever it is. I think sometimes they feel like they need to kind of create a cause or a problem, because let's be honest, life for human beings has never been better than it is today. And it'll be even better tomorrow.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, so they kind of invent these causes to get behind, or they feel like they're being self-important, or, you know, they're better than you at least, because they believe this and you don't. You know, they've got their cause and you don't. You know,
sure.
I think that's what a lot of it is.
Yeah, and I mean, free speech is free speech, man. I think that's great. But you know, going up and we're shooting for Uncharted and with the Inuit, which are, you know, Eskimos in the States, basically. And, you know, on the middle of the ice and the, you know, dog sleds and all that, the complete real deal. And the guy there, the Inuit guy, I mean, we're talking about a dying generation now. Like the Inuit are within 20 years, a lot of stuff they're doing now, it's just not going to exist, not in its real form. You know, they don't need to. They work in the mines and they have TV and all that. But this guy, you know, he's talking about something I'm forgetting the word now,
trivial?
No, not trivial. It's when you, divisive. So something as divisive as polar bear hunting, which, you know, even if you're a hunter, a lot of people look at that and say, well, you know, do you really need to kill polar bears or seal clubbing, stuff like that? And I mean, the guy's standing there in his seal suit, you know, doing stuff that his forefathers taught him and that for generations they've been doing, and the most frigid, horrible, ugly conditions you could ever imagine. And the way that he exists is to go out and hunt polar bears for their hides, or seals for their meat and for their hides and their pelts. And we in the South are actually telling him that he can't do that, and we're doing it based on information that we certainly don't have firsthand. We have, you know, third hand or something through studies that we've read. And, you know, the guy looks around and he says, there's more polar bears now than there ever has been. And he actually almost feels sorry for us because he says that we're just uneducated. And I think that that is such an amazing thing. You know, right or wrong, for a guy like that to say that we are uneducated, where I think the common perception for us is that, you know, those type of people aren't educated, is crazy. I think that was, you actually asked me earlier if those are, you know, some of the coolest projects we've done, and working with the Inuit was definitely, you know, the top three for sure.
If you could choose anywhere to go hunting yourself for anything,
yeah,
what would it be? And you could pick one person, we'll say living, who would you take?
Clint Eastwood, definitely.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, no, I mean, can I have two answers on that? I actually do have two answers.
Yeah, you want alive and dead, or you just two different pieces?
No, I'm not for the person. I don't know, but actually, I do know the person for real. No, it's not Clint Eastwood. So for the hunt, first of all, for the place, definitely the coolest hunt that I can think of doing in terms of, like, just for what it is, I think is Nepal. So that for me was like life changing, and it was such an amazing experience. And you know, the mountains and stuff are to me really hard to beat. But I will say, and this is going to sound really backwards and weird, but I have this kind of, I had this sort of dream that once we get done all the TV show stuff, once the production stuff gets done, I'm talking years down the line when everything's over, and I'm like, yeah, you know, we're just, you know, we're ready to throw in the towel, so to speak. I'd like to get a patch of land and have a place to go hunting, just like I think a lot of people currently do, which I don't, because I live in the city and, you know, we produce our shows here. And take my dad and do something like that, because that's something that I haven't done enough in my life, because I've been so focused on, you know, the production angle of things, and most of the time I would rather have a camera in my hand than gun out there. So I haven't had a chance to really go hunting with my father in the way, I mean, I have when I was younger, he did a lot of that, but not in the way that my dad, before my grandparents died, you know, passed away, where he'd take them out. And I think that would be something that way down the line I'd love to do.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I agree. My dad, I try to take him out, and it's in different contexts, 100%, but being able to get him out, and, you know, we work so much during the day, and he's so focused and so, you know, get stressed with certain things. Just getting out of that element and enjoying the family, and, you know, like I said, just to the bare essentials of what you're there experiencing, it's priceless, you know. So I encourage you to try that, man. I really do. You know, I'm little guy telling you to hunt, you know, with hunting icon Jim Shockey, like, yeah, man, go hunt with him. No, it's from a perspective of someone who's tried to hunt with his dad a little bit more recently, and just to appreciate he's still here, my dad's still here, and I get to experience that. Yeah, it's worth it, and I think that's a great answer, man. I mean, it really is. So you said you had a second one, though.
I just meant Nepal for an actual, like, if I was just to be transported to a place right now and go hunting, it'd be Nepal for sure. It's just awesome. But in terms of, like, the actual, what I would really, really actually do, and if I had unlimited time to do it, you know, meaning years down the road, would be go out with my dad. Probably wouldn't bring a camera, to be honest, and maybe a film camera or something like that.
Polaroid.
Yeah, like a Polaroid. You know, yeah, exactly. And just and do it, you know, kind of, you know, just sort of normally. You know, I think that'd be cool.
I guess that's the thing. It doesn't matter, you know. It's like, to everyone else, your dad's Jim Shockey to you. He's the guy who told you to finish your homework, eat your vegetables.
That was my mom mostly, but
well, you know, it's still just your dad. You know, that's what it comes down to. And I think there is that father-son bond that is pretty unique and amazing. And I can even see, I'm expecting my first kid.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, thank you. Just got married in July myself, so congratulations to you on that.
Awesome. Yeah, congratulations.
But I see, you know, Phil with his son, and he took him up into the mountains hunting with him, you know, to go along, and the pictures he had in the story of the first time his son heard an elk bugle were just amazing, you know?
Oh, that's incredible. Cool.
Yeah, it was good, man. It was classic. But we're getting close to that time, man. So I've got a couple last minute questions. I don't know if Will has anything else to finish up with you, but it's kind of trade show season coming up here.
Yeah.
Are you working towards any shows? Are you going to be at any shows?
So I'm going to be at SHOT Show for the entire time. They have the Outdoor Channel Awards during that time, so I'm normally there. So I'll do that. Other than that, I'm going to be working on finishing these shows. We're as last minute and tight end's deadlines as we've ever been.
Cool. I'm going to make my first visit to SHOT this year for a couple days. I'll look for you, man. I'd love to shake your hand and just tell you thanks for coming on the show here.
Hey, my absolute pleasure. Yeah, absolutely. Let's definitely do that. That'd be great.
Yeah, best friends. Forgetting all about poor Will.
Hey, Will.
It's too bad.
Hey, Will, did you say that you got some blue drink? Did you say you got some blue drink, Will, from Mountain Ops?
Yeah, I did. Mountain Ops. Wait, you didn't get it?
Leaving Phil out of the equation here,
Hey, you know what, though? When I called, I made sure it was known that Phil needed some blue drink, and I have no idea how, but mine also had a handwritten love note with hearts on it.
Okay, well.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm not, you know, I don't know how it happened. But I'm sure it was just an oversight or a problem with shipping that you didn't get yours.
Allegedly now, Brandlin's sister Eva is going to be at ATA in the Mountain Ops booth. I might just have to see if she can autograph my blue drink container. And that way I can blast it all over social media and, you know, I'll have it one of a kind.
What? That's you're right. Saying Jordan's just going signing these with hearts to everybody?
You can have Jordan's signature, man. I'm okay with that too. But anyway, so
Brandlin,
yeah.
Would you like some Mountain Ops? I'll get you some Mountain Ops. Forget Phil. I'll send you his.
I would actually like some because my sister gets all that stuff. I never get any of it.
Yeah. See,
that's the problem being the unsung hero, the man behind the lens. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, even if I was in front of it, I don't think I would do the same type of job that she's done. She's doing great.
She is killing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you work out at all, or do you don't have time?
Why don't you see that, Will?
I mean, you're obviously breaking out of that flannel, you know. You're pretty built.
I try and stay in shape, yeah. Less, especially nowadays, less like, not so much of the weight stuff anymore. I do a lot more of the sort of runs and things. I was actually quite inspired by Cam and his sort of what he does. So I try and do stuff that makes me able to, I don't know, just be better in real life situations rather than being able to, you know, bench press a car or whatever.
Functional fitness.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You ever thought about doing CrossFit?
I actually have thought about it. And then my wife actually talk me out of it. I don't know. I don't know what it is, like rurally, but in the cities here, it's a little bit too campy for kind of what I'm looking for.
You should give it a shot.
Is it good?
Here's the thing. There is no good or bad CrossFit.
Okay.
There are only good or bad coaches or coaches cool. who may okay. not click with you. So the one thing I would say is really – look around because I'm sure in Vancouver you have a lot of options. So I would really look around before you select a place to give a shot because you could go, it's kind of like hunting. You have a bad experience, chances are you're not going back.
You're not going to, yeah. Speaking of that, going with your athletics line with the iron roll stuff, I think that a hunting, you know, fitness kind of, program of some type, I think would be really cool.
There is one out there. You can go to traintohunt.com and follow a whole training regimen. Yes, just made for hunters, specifically.
No
for
way.
There's, have you ever heard of Train to Hunt before?
I haven't. No.
Oh wow. Well then, we should have talked about this first thing.
I'm gonna write that down.
Train to Hunt is a competition that was created by Kenton Claremont. He was a CrossFit Games regional athlete, I think semi-pro baseball player. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm more impressed by the CrossFit Games regional athlete, but really badass, super fit guy. And he started online training for hunters, but he would notice that there would be a drop-off post-hunting season. So he came up with the train-to-hunt challenges that run throughout the summer, so hunters would still be motivated and have you know, summer goals to stay fit. And cool. So now they're in 10 different – they're going to be in 10 different states this year, Phil.
I think so, yeah.
10 different states this year, and how it runs is that it's 2 days, three parts, and the first part is a 3D hunter's 3D shoot. And how that runs is it's not like your normal 3D archery shoot. Instead, you know, you go, there's unknown distances, but you'll have to shoot
it's one shot, hunting scenario shots.
Yeah, it's like one shot, then say your first shot was bad, you have to shoot another shot within 10 seconds. You know, things like that, shooting from kneeling. What else is there, Phil?
There's time shots. There's
time shots.
Draw and hold your bow for 30 seconds or a minute before you can shoot the arrow.
So you're saying that my brilliant idea about the hunting training stuff has already been done?
Yeah.
Dust in my dreams. Okay.
Yep. Then there's a meat pack event where you get 100 pounds in a pack. You run a course. You're timed. And then the second day is kind of like a Spartan race, only you get to shoot five. You take your bow with you and you shoot five different targets and you carry 20 pounds in a pack. You know, and you're racing other dudes and stuff. And Phil, you know, brush his shoulders off, is the 2014 national champion. He won three events last year but was unable to compete at nationals, you know, because he was busy killing a sheep in the Maroon Bells.
No way. That's awesome.
That's big, so you guys are badass.
That's awesome.
That's big sexy right there.
We try to act like badasses, but no, man, it's more of the same, just getting ready for hunting. Those events are just – they fit into what so many of us are already doing, that it was an easy fit to go out and to do those kind of competitions. But
sure,
it is.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, Kenton's got the online training. So if you want to look at kind of more personalized workouts for functional hunting fitness, he's got a great programming there. His events are really good. They're a lot of fun. It's a great community that's, you know, going out and doing those events. So it's fun.
That's totally awesome.
And then Mr. Mendoza's also starting a competition himself. He's hosting at his shop. I didn't know if you know this too, but Phil also owns the largest archery shop in the Denver metro area, where he is hosting a fitness-based another two-day event based around bow hunting. You know, kind of see who the biggest badass is.
No way. That's very, very, very cool.
We're pretty involved with a lot of irons in the fire, and we throw a whole bunch of stuff against the wall to see what sticks, and you know how it goes.
There's actually, you know, Brandlin, I got an idea. I have an idea. Here we go. There is actually an event, I believe, in Oregon.
There is.
Yeah, in Oregon. I think, where's what's the guy's name there that the bow shop cam goes to? What's his name? Wayne Endicott. Wayne Endicott has actually competed in Train to Hunt. I think you set a goal to compete. You know, ask Cam, hey, Cam, would you mind being my partner? Because there's a men's team division, right? This will give you, I mean, something to go out, you know, and do. And you guys show up and give it a shot.
I would love to do that, especially if I can hop in his backpack and he can hike me up there. That sounds great.
Well, I mean, yeah, here's the thing. If you guys do poorly, everyone's going to look at you. But it's worth giving a shot anyway.
I'm playing campaigns. Like, man, you clearly didn't pull your side of the team here.
You just look out. Have you even been working out, bro?
actually, that sounds incredible. I'd love to follow up with that for sure.
Or here's the kicker, right? Mm-hmm. Does your wife shoot?
Not currently, but I think she probably too.
All right, get her into archery. You guys do it together because there's a co-eds division as well.
Well, actually, to be honest, I would have to brush up on my shooting as well, Will. So I definitely have to train for this.
Yeah, I would definitely train for it. Definitely, yes. I recommend training for it.
I would probably train for it.
It gives you something to go for, though.
No, but in all seriousness, that sounds like that is the kind of stuff that I would love to do. And to be honest, sitting up here in Canada inside of a city and all that, you know, that's all stuff that is, I'm making excuses, but that's, it's difficult to, you know, keep up with that kind of, it's just difficult to, you know, train like that and get on the wilderness. So yeah, I would love to give it a shot.
All right then. So we're going to see you competing in a train hunt event in 2016.
You will definitely see Canes, and you will maybe see me as his partner. We'll see.
So you're already signing Cam up for
yeah, I'll sign Cam up.
Partner to be determined. Just leave an open slot. Be
like, I'm sure Cam would be thrilled to have me with him as a partner.
You know what the fun is, though, because I've done it. Foyle and I have both done it, individuals and partners. The thing about being with a partner is when you're there by yourself, you're really in game mode. You're really not being that social, talking to other people. But when you're there with a partner, it's like you're at a party, like getting you know, shit talk everybody, you know, all the other teams there, just kind of, you know, socialize a lot more. If you're feeling the pressure, you can lean on that other person a little bit. It's a lot of fun.
Can yell at people from Cam's backpack.
Exactly. Just tell them, listen, if at any point I go unconscious, drag me to the finish.
You would too. That's a funny thing.
Oh, I think he could easily drag you.
Oh yeah.
Hey man, Brandon, we appreciate you coming on. You know, looking forward to seeing what you have your finger on in the works here moving forward. But you know, some of the stuff that people can see now, obviously Carter's War. Anything else that you want to throw out there for people to just be aware of to start looking for if it hasn't already started? You know, share some of the projects that we're going to see sooner than later.
Well, I mean, honestly, right now Uncharted, Carter's War are the big ones. And, you know, I think Carter's War is having its main launch on the 18th of January. So if anyone can tune into that, that would be amazing. So that's the one the channel is pushing. Right now it's kind of a soft launch. So, yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing. And then, you know, obviously anything in the future that we can do would be great.
So 18th of January, Carter's War main launch. So you said?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah.
Will they have episodes available online at any time or any online content for that? Or what's the plan there?
You know what? It's not currently planned. That's all stuff that's being worked on as well as streaming and everything. But it's just not on the table quite yet. But, you know, I hope that stuff will get put online fairly quickly.
I'm excited for sure. Awesome. About it.
That's
I'm very
it.
Excited.
Yeah. 100%. And then we appreciate it. Like I said, I'll look for you a shot. I'd love to meet you and, you know, bend your ear for a minute or two. I know you're going to be busy. Kissing babies and, you know, shaking hands out there.
That's my dad and my sister. And
behind the camera.
I got lots of time. No, that'd be great. And
awesome.
Much for your time, guys. Really, really appreciate it. I meant a lot. You said some nice stuff. So,
thank you. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase your dreams, repeat.